Hello and welcome to AARC Perspectives, where we talk with members of the respiratory care community and learn about their experiences caring for patients and building the profession. I am Doug Lair, Chief Operating Officer at the American Association for Respiratory Care, and I will serve as your host for today's episode. Since 1947, the AARC has been leading the effort to advance the respiratory care profession and promote high-quality, cost-effective, patient-centric respiratory care. The respiratory care profession is ever-growing and evolving thanks to dedicated respiratory therapists around the world. Today is a special episode. Instead of just one guest, we've doubled the value by adding a second guest to the podcast, discussing the AARC's newly rebranded Uniform Reporting Manual, now called the Safe and Effective Staffing Guide. Are two pioneers in the field of management and leadership, productivity and efficiency, and staffing optimization. Today, we'll discuss how the Safe and Effective Staffing Guide is differentiated from the URM, and most importantly, why managers and staff should insist on its use in the hospital. Our first guest is Mr. Gary Kaufman. Gary is a registered respiratory therapist with over 40 years of experience and is a fellow of the AARC. Gary also has the distinction of board certification in healthcare from the American College of Healthcare Executives. His focus is on connecting the science with the value of respiratory care delivery. Also joining us today is Mr. Rick Ford. Rick became a respiratory therapist in 1977. He is a sought-after expert in respiratory care protocols, staffing, informatics, benchmarking, and leadership. And now Rick is retired, but only after serving as the Director of Respiratory Care at the University of California, San Diego, where he spent the majority of his career. Enjoy my conversation with Gary and Rick. Gentlemen, good afternoon. Welcome to today's podcast.
Yeah, good afternoon, Doug and Gary.
Good afternoon, Doug and Rick.
We're here today to talk about something really, really exciting for the respiratory care profession, for managers, leaders across the country, and really for any hospital administrator who wants to get their arms around value, efficiency, productivity for the staff, staffing optimization, et cetera. And that's what we have our two experts here for. So let's just jump right into this, if you don't mind. Gary, we're going to start with you. So for many, many years, and for our longtime listeners, longtime members, they're very familiar with the AARC Uniform Reporting Manual. And that has been around for many, many years. And I think that it's going to be important for us to just give a little history lesson to our listeners today, if you don't mind, and talk to them a little bit about what the precipice was for the very first Uniform Reporting Manual. And then I think that is going to catapult us into a conversation with Rick about what the AARC is going to be doing this year. So Gary, if you don't mind, for our novice listeners, maybe provide a cursory review of those first five editions of the Uniform Reporting Manual and how managers were tasked to use those resources and implement them in their department.
Be happy to, Doug. Some of our newer managers may not even be aware, but the first edition was published way back in 1976. And the reason for this was AARC leadership recognized that we didn't have a standard methodology to measure clinical productivities, and specifically how many respiratory staff were needed to meet the patient demand. And this was during a time of dramatic growth, and what managers were faced with was, how do I justify the additional staff, the staff we needed for this increased patient demand? The issue was the metrics that were used in those days focused on charges. If you think back to that time, we were a fee-for-service model for at least inpatient acute care. And it was easy. You dropped a charge for nebulizer treatment, or if you remember, those IPPB treatments were all the rage. And along with oxygen hours and ventilated patient days, that was our productivity system. Unfortunately, that didn't account for the patient demand because we only counted charges. So rather than counting a nebulizer treatment, or I might say an IPPB treatment with that green box back in the day, the value was not one treatment equaled one ventilator day, although a lot of folks counted it that way. So the AERC's focus was to use standardized procedural times. And for example, a nebulizer may be assigned 15 minutes, where a ventilated patient setup would be 37. So you mentioned since those days up until the current time, how many iterations have we had? And about, I think it's 12 years ago now, we had the fifth edition. So it's been modified as the practice patterns have changed. I remember getting my first manual and looking at it and quickly paging right to the numbers page. I wanted to see what Rick Ford put, what number Rick had in there for a nebulizer treatment or an arterial puncture. But it was really more than that in those days and has been up until this current time. I know Rick is going to talk more about this, but not only did it have the numbers, the procedure time, but it had a wealth of resources, how the numbers were garnered, the statistical research that was done to validate those numbers from hundreds of hospitals over the United States, and a wealth of other resources that really helped the manager use this supportive tool.
Gary, what I find so fascinating and interesting is that the Uniform Reporting Manual dates back to the 1970s, and yet we still have respiratory departments that are still measuring productivity, value, and efficiency based on the number of procedures that they do with no differentiation.
Yep. One equals one arithmetically, but a nebulizer treatment doesn't equal a ventilated patient day, or most certainly shouldn't.
Absolutely. So Rick, we're going to jump over to you now. And this is where I think the rubber hits the road for the profession, is that we have moved beyond just measuring productivity, because quite frankly, if the procedures and the tasks and the services that the respiratory therapist is performing provides no relevance whatsoever, then we're measuring the wrong things. And we could be measuring the wrong things and be at 100% productivity, but that doesn't mean anything. And so I think this really leads to the evolution of the Uniform Reporting Manual to what has now been rebranded as the Safe and Effective Staffing Guide. Rick, talk to our audience a little bit today about how this differentiates itself from the first five iterations of the Uniform Reporting Manual.
Glad to, Doug. And I will regress just a little bit. That's what happens when you get an old retired guy talking to you. Because I want to highlight some of the things that Gary mentioned in terms of history, because it really is personal to me. And Gary kind of talked about the changing in the reimbursement, systems and DRGs and things like that. You know, DRGs were put out there to basically control healthcare inflation. And so as we shifted from being a revenue center to a cost center, things got really tough for a department head. So that Uniform Reporting Manual was out there at the time. And I'll have to say, back in the early 80s, I didn't know much about it. But I did go to an AARC Congress, and I ran into Cynthia Molly, who was eventually the president of the AARC several years later. And she had a little booth, and it had AARC there, and as the owner of that booth, of course. And I knew Cynthia. I said, "Well, what are you doing?" And she said, "Well, I'm here with the AARC, and I am telling people about the Uniform Reporting Manual." So it was about 1983 I met Cynthia, and I met my first Uniform Reporting Manual, which at that time they were just planning the second edition. And I got on board like that. And I got on board like that because I had just finished laying off 40 of my 120 staff with a mandate from administration. And I was defenseless. You know, I was one of those guys that came out of the ICU, a hotshot ICU therapist, that because I was good in the ICU became a department director. I didn't know what the heck I was doing, but this manual made sense to me. And there was another thing that made great sense at that Congress, and that was George Burton, Judy Tesort, and the folks from the Cleveland Clinic that were presenting protocols. And I could, you know, I could see this vision of linking the Uniform Reporting Manual with a value-added program such as patient-driven protocols. So I became involved at that second edition. And as Gary mentioned, the subsequent editions included those time standard tables, and many of us were just buying the manual to get those updated time standard tables. And then occasionally there was a little bit of something added as it evolved. And I was a co-author, you know, since I met Cynthia Molly at the Congress became involved. So I'm intimately familiar with what they contain. And I will tell you, we made a major shift in the fourth and fifth edition, and we tried to provide more information about how to develop your own time standards. We tried to enable department managers with the knowledge and the information to develop their own time standards. So you ask yourself, why is it, in a survey I did in California, less than 25% of managers use the URM? And that's what you were talking about, Doug. Well, you know, why people still aren't using this? It came out in 77. We still don't have people using it. And I know a recent survey Gary did, I think the numbers were even less than that, weren't they, Gary? Weren't they down around 10%?
Yep, about 10%, yes.
So you ask, we ask ourselves why. As we got this expert team together, and under Gary's direction as the project lead, and myself as an advisor and some other experts within the field, we really ask ourselves why. I mean, you have this tool that makes sense, that others have demonstrated it works, but let's give the benefit of the doubt. Let's use my higher number of less than 25% people are using it. I call it a URM underground movement. And that's those department heads that have so much faith in the Uniform Reporting Manual, they're using it behind the scenes. So finance is doing one thing and they're doing another thing. And they're also using that for staffing. Remember, we used to staff based on, you know, handing out treatment cards. One was 1 point, the other was 2 points. You'd go out with 24 points. So a lot of managers were using the URM as their work assignment program. But we couldn't get finance on board. So as we were looking at this new URM, the sixth edition, which has been rebranded, we spent a lot of time asking ourselves, why is it not being implemented? And, you know, you kind of work through these reasons, and it can be anything from, you know, therapist education, perhaps lack of evidence, a lack of alignment with hospital systems, you know, inability of a department manager to make a case, which I think that's a huge one. You've got to be able to sit down with executives and be able to make sense of all this and convince them in a short amount of period of time that it has value and is worth doing. So, again, we ask ourselves why, and these were some of the reasons why it was not being accepted. And so as we developed the new URM, we said, let's include content to better educate department managers. Let's include more detail so they understand the methodology to a greater degree, because it begins with that level of education and understanding that's instilled within a manager to set in front of their administrator and be able to articulate why it's important, next steps, those types of things, to be able to frame it up with different programs within the hospital to accomplish outcomes that are desired. I will say the most important part is the shift to value. And when we first started this project 3 years ago, we were going to have a section of the manual that was purely based in time standards and a section of the value of the manual that was all about the value proposition. And at the time, Gary and myself and the leaders from the ARC and the expert team thought that maybe that was a little bit too much to chew off at one time. You know, we hadn't got the first part of the manual implemented. So how are we going to introduce this whole new concept? So what we decided to do is really focus in on the time standards, discuss why they're important, provide people more of the how to do it, and then identifying why they're struggling. Is it an information system problem? Yeah, it could be. So let's include a chapter on information system. Is it that they don't quite grasp the pitfalls of using billable procedures or patient days? Okay, let's include a chapter of case studies and productivity, you know. So it is, and the big thing we said is looking at value. So if you look back, it was probably 3 years ago at the Congress, Rob Chatburn, who's a very innovative guy and a mentor of many of us, presented, you know, an approach to looking at value that could actually quantify it. And we've been using value proposition for a long time, but the issue is, how do you quantify it within your productivity system? So what we did is we decided to introduce this concept of value in the new safe and effective staffing guide, which is the rebranding of the URM, because the URM is kind of associated with these time standards. So we want this to be a guide that incorporates all these other things I mentioned. We'll talk a little bit more about that, but really focuses it on value. So I think, you know, what differentiates this manual is much more than time standards. We've also changed the methodology through some advice from expert statisticians, and we've included a lot of other content. And I think we all have to thank the expert team and some of the independent authors that participated to make this truly a guide that we hope benefits many as they perhaps struggle with what I did 40 years ago, you know, having to lay off 40 staff members. And I know we're in the middle of a pandemic, so the staffing situation is a little different. I mean, there's several departments out there that are, you know, 30% down in staff because everyone's working for Travelers and all that stuff. So it's hard to relate to the discussion right now, but let's look out to the future. And I think people will find this of tremendous value.
Rick, you bring up something that I think that is fascinating, and that is that many RT managers these days are promoted into the position because of their clinical skills, not because of their analytics or business skills. We have more and more baby boomers who have retired and are retiring. So I think that one could argue that we potentially have the greatest number of inexperienced RT managers in the history of the profession. The problem is exacerbated. Data is probably the most desirable and valuable quantity on earth right now. But just having the data is one thing. You've got to know what to do with it. The thing that I'm probably most excited about is that the rebranding of the guide, as we call it, really helps to take things one step further to help these novice managers understand not only how to interpret the data and what it means, but to be able to communicate it effectively to the C-suite. You had mentioned something earlier about this underground movement of the URM. What would you find would be the value if finance departments were calculating productivity one way, but yet the managers were using the URM to calculate it another way? What was the benefit of doing that?
Well, Doug, I can share with you is I was one of those underground users for about 3 years. And part of it is we adopted URM methodology and the microcosting system at UC San Diego, where I was director for about 25 years. But at one point, the hospital adopted a new cost management system that would not weight any procedures. So my productivity through administration was based on billable procedures, all counting as one. Now, I was fortunate enough to have a department-based information system where I could retain procedure counts within the department and assign time values. So I kept the URM in place within the department. And we started looking at differences between the hospital system and the URM system and showing that oftentimes the hospital system would actually demonstrate that I needed more FTEs than I actually felt I needed through the URM measures. So I would certainly make a big announcement to administration that, please know, I'm 5 FTEs under, and it's because of the system I'm using. You know, on occasionally it would be a little over. But the reality is you still need that type of system in place if you're to do fair and equitable work assignments and mid-shift redistribution of work. You have to know how much work is out there. You can't do that by counting patients. You need those systems in place. And I tell you what we eventually did is we were able to show the benefits over those 2 to 3 years that finance wasn't using the URM and convince them to use those time standards again so they can convert it back. And we were looking at micro costing programs. And if you're going to cost out your care, you need to know how long you're caring for a patient. So there were other systems in the hospital and other goals that we piggybacked on.
Hey, Doug, you reminded me of something Rick said. In the new guide, there's going to be several new features, tools. And what Rick was talking about is one of those sections where we have a number of case studies that show the clinical FTEs required using the current metric and how much different that is using a intensity of service or procedure time. And that's going to be very helpful to users of the guide, particularly those, maybe not the undergrounders, but those who don't know how to utilize the system, to sit down with their administrator, certainly their medical director, maybe the budget or finance folks, and say, look at this. These are the FTEs that the system provides to me. The validated system is different. It might be more. It might be less. And Rick's is a great example of it.
Obviously, if you're a department leader, department manager, administrator, supervisor, this podcast is for you, right? But why should the staff therapist care about this podcast? Why should they care about the guide? Rick, talk briefly, and then I'd like to give Gary an opportunity to respond the same, but why should they care?
Obviously, if you ask any department manager what's one of their biggest challenges, they're going to talk about staffing, you know. And I think if you discuss with a respiratory practitioner what's one of their greatest concerns, and it's about, I've got too much to do. They're asking too much of me. And I think that Doug, your point is excellent. And my approach when I implemented a variety of staffing programs, and I've implemented this type of stuff in interventional pulmonary. I've done it in occupational med because when I left UCSD, I had about 300 employees. Half of them weren't respiratory therapists, but I used the same methodology. And one of the keys in doing it was to engage the staff. So they were part of the process. They were part of the team that sit down and looked over the time standards. They were part of the team that help us go through the methodology to create new time standards and buy in on the program and help do test trials with it. And so I think, you know, staff obviously want to have enough in numbers in order to provide quality and effective care. I mean, that's why they're waking up in the morning to do that, to make a difference. And if we don't provide enough help, they're going to struggle with that. And we have burnout and motivational problems and all those types of things.
While the assumption from many sources, staff, the C-suite, et cetera, think that these tools are meant to cut staff, the exact opposite is just as likely to happen if you're measuring the right thing. While we could talk about this forever, there is a segment of this conversation that I'd like to move forward with. And we've spoken about the term value many times, just in this, this 15, 20 minutes that we've spoken about so far. Gary, value means so many different things to different people. What does it mean to you?
You know, Doug, if you had asked me that question 30 years ago, I would have thought almost singularly, it's the value at the time I provide, let's say, a breathing treatment. So I walk into a patient's room, introduce myself, and I give them a breathing treatment. Back in the day, it might have been bronchosol, now it's albuterol. How do I know, what are the criteria that I use to say, did I provide any value? Well, at the point of that breathing treatment, what do we note in the patient record? Breath sounds, the amount of secretions that were retained, that now they're coughing out, maybe a change in their pulse ox. That is value at the time of the delivery of service. But then over the last probably 10, 12 years, we started talking about the triple aim and the longitudinal value. We started to question, is it the intervention itself, the fact that we place a patient on with PEEP, where we do SVTs, does that have an impact on their ventilator length of stay, their ICU length of stay, their total length of stay, and cost? So I think to simplify, value is the point of delivery of a service. Did the patient get clinically better as a result or not? And secondly, was there longitudinal value to those parameters or criteria that I mentioned? You know, that's what administrators, that's what PI professionals, that's what consultants, that's what physicians, and by the way, that's what our government is looking for, not the intervention itself. Did I get my treatments done, but were they necessary? Did they provide an impact at the moment, and how did they contribute to the overall care of that patient? And I think back to when I was AERC president. I don't mean that this was the right strategic goals to have, but our board approved a three strategic goals. The one is to build the foundation. That is there science in respiratory care procedures? If yes, proceed. If not, find something else. Secondly, while the service may have value, both at the time of delivery and longitudinal value, is there a linkage between the therapist? And that's really where I think we're at that point today, where more people are questioning, does the respiratory therapist add value? We all know the answer is yes. We know we're the only trained and competency-tested healthcare professional to deliver a breathing treatment. But then the third part is we need to communicate it. So establish the science, link the therapist as the best clinician provider, and three, let everybody know. Not day shift reporting to nights, not respiratory therapists telling the nurses in the ICU what you did or your report, but your administrator. Does your administrator know the value that you bring? Busyness is not value. Efficiency of itself is not value. And I think we're going to talk a little bit later. Rick's going to mention the concept of value efficiency. We've got to nail the value part down in very concrete terms. Is there science? Linking the therapist to that science. And the third part, communicate. And quite honestly, the third part is an area that we really have been challenged with. We all know it, as does the rest of the world. Once we do that, then we will have firmly cemented the value of the respiratory therapist as the best provider of our services.
So the guide, the Safe and Effective Staffing Guide, is going to allow RT departments to better communicate the value that they bring to their hospital. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And I know Rick's going to talk more about this, but the value efficiency concept, we've had pieces before, but we've never had them together. And we believe, the AERC Board of Directors, our leadership believes that that will be truly the turning point from being effective at point of delivery, being efficient in delivering, but delivering that longitudinal value that you get, as we're calling it, value efficiency.
So let's jump over to you then, Rick. He kicked that over to you very nicely. Last year, the AARC Board of Directors approved a value efficiency position statement, and I believe that you are on the committee that helped draft that position statement. Can you describe how this paper, this value efficiency position statement, is going to be able to help RT managers quantify the value of their department?
I think that, you know, as we work through what we call the URM and started incorporating value and thinking about it, and then looking at Rob's work, Gary and Rob and myself revised the original, what was going to be a manuscript submitted to the RC Journal for publication. And we revised that to make it a little more user-friendly. And as we were doing that and talking with folks like yourself who helped move this along into the formulating it into a position paper and a position issues paper and a position statement, you know, we all realize that this is important. So how do we best get this information out to practitioners? Well, do we publish it in AARC Times? Well, AARC Times has taken a new form on an online, you know, AARC newsroom. How do we get this out? And Doug, I think it was an exceptional idea you had is let's look at it from a position paper, an issue paper, and a position a statement. And so we thought about that and said, yeah, let's go ahead and follow that route. So what the position statement does is it's a one-page statement, and it's simply intended to get managers to start thinking that looking at just time standards is not enough, that they've got to really focus on value. And there are some managers across the country that have done an exceptional job of that, but we need all managers to make that transition. So that's part of what the position statement is about, is just recognizing that we need to focus on value. And Gary defined it, but it really comes down to demonstrating that it's clear and unquestionable that by engaging a respiratory practitioner, that there is a difference in care, that outcomes are achieved, that the patients are getting better, that we're doing it at a lower cost. All those types of benefits, that's what we've got to link our staffing programs to, in addition to the science of quantifying time standards.
Well, I think this is interesting that you mentioned, is that we have time standards for incentive spirometry, but the science is no longer there. This value efficiency piece is going to allow departments to say, sure, we can continue to do incentive spirometry. We have time standards to do that, but now we can prioritize and give it a weight-based prioritization based on the value that it provides to the patient. And then ultimately, it's the hospital's determination whether you want to continue to do that or not. So I'll kick it back over to you.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And if you look at the position statement, it's going to leave, hopefully everyone that reads that is going to be saying, yeah, I agree with that, but where do I go from here? How do I make that happen? And that's why we actually have the issues paper to tell folks how that happens. And both the statement and the issues paper will be in the Safe and Effective Staffing Guide. So people that purchase this product will have both those right at their fingertips. And the other thing is we are working on getting that published in the RC Journal. So hopefully that'll happen. But the issues paper provides a methodology. And really what it comes down to is, if you think about it, we spend a lot of time doing the wrong things right.
Yes, we do.
You know, so we're doing the wrong things right. So we've got to do the right things right. So the wrong things have no value. There may not be a medical indication. There may not be medical evidence. They may not be protocol driven. They may be a more costly type of intervention in which there's a lesser cost way of doing the same thing. So we're doing the wrong things right. So if we're looking at the term value efficiency, and we're looking at what is contained in that issues paper for value efficiency, it's a way of ensuring that what we're doing makes a difference. Let's say you're using uniform reporting manual methodology and you're assigning your procedure times and you're looking at your quantities and you're coming up with that you needed 6,000 hours in a month of variable clinical hours. That's how many variable clinical hours you had. Now, if you were spending those hours and doing things that were not necessary, that had little medical indication, that were not achieving the desired outcomes of the patient, or that were more costly, you're spending some of your hours doing things that aren't needed, that don't make a difference. It'd kind of be like, Doug, if you had a car and you wanted to do an oil change every week. So, well, what do you want to do an oil change every week? You're paying for people, you're paying for supplies, you're paying for your oil to do this every week. You don't do it because it's not needed. Yet, we don't apply the same thing to patients. I mean, we'll do incentive spirometry. There's still some people that are stuck in the IPPB world doing aerosol therapy that's maybe not effective or indicated. So it's what we're trying to do is say, let's look at a way that we can staff not only based on looking at the hours required, but are those hours that are required being spent in doing things that really make a difference, that are of value. So what it involves is not only coming up with a time standard, but a value rating for various procedures. So what you're able to do is you're not only able to, let's say, apply a time standard of 20 minutes for something. If it has a value rating of 100%, then you get all 20 minutes. If it has a value rating of 50%, then it's only worth 10 minutes. And the issue is then not, okay, does that mean I only get 10 minutes worth of practitioner time to do that? The practitioner still has to do the work. It's still perhaps ordered by the physician, but it allows you to then have a discussion with your administration that we provided 6,000 hours worth of care, but only 5,000 of it had value. And Mr. Administrator and my medical director, if you allow us to implement protocols, procedural changes, those types of things, I can get you down to 5,000 hours worth of care. So that's what it's about. It's value efficiency is about incorporating these value scores procedures So you can really focus in on doing the right things the right way.
It's the old adage of, if you want me to take on something new, tell me what to cut because we have no more time. This tool is going to allow the RT manager to go in and say, if you want to continue to do incentive spirometry in our hospital, we can do that. But here's what the actual cost to the organization is going to be. And it's a great justification tool as well. Rick, great content, but there's still one more question that I want to ask Gary. And that is this. Gary, you spent many years as a department manager yourself. Value efficiency, you know, this is all content that for the neophyte manager might be very, very overwhelming. You know, Rick is tossing out terms that might be confusing to even some of the most experienced managers. But if you were to offer our novice managers just one tip, what would that tip or recommendation be?
That's the golden question, Doug. I think I'm going to divide this into four steps. The first step is thoroughly understand what you're using currently. And I'll give you an example. Talking to a manager that she posted as a result of posting on AERC Connect about 3 years ago. And she said, a new COO is in town. I have to increase my productivity. What else can I charge for? And those seasoned therapists, two of those in this podcast, probably seized at that and said, that's not what we really need to do. It's what Rick was talking about. Validate that which you do. Eliminate that which doesn't add value. So step one is understand what's currently being used. And that allows you to look at the strengths and weaknesses of that. If the metric is average daily census, and you know that you care for maybe 20 to 25% of the patients in the hospital, that's not a very good metric. So first, understand. Secondly, you got to get with your medical director because she is the most supportive person, or should be. And chances are good, if you haven't had this discussion, that they don't know what the metric is. They don't know why the consultant's coming in, other than we all say, cut. Get your medical director on board. So what does that do? The medical director's responsibility is to assure quality of care. So stacking four nebulizers at a time, if that's what it takes to hit the 25th percentile, that's not what it takes to achieve quality. The third is talk to your peers. And I learned this years ago with a nurse manager at break. Remember, we used to have breaks like lunch and supper and even a coffee break every couple of weeks or so. And she came to the break table, threw down this pile of papers and said, what the heck does this mean? This is my productivity target. What is this? And it was nursing hours per patient day. And she and I started looking at that. And I said, this is based upon simply how many nursing hours you need for your unit. And she said, where does that come from? What's a benchmark somewhere out there in consultant world that says these are how many hours you need for a particular type of patient? And here's what's important to understand. They didn't compare her open heart unit to a behavioral health nursing unit. They compared open heart units to open heart units. So I think the third thing is learn from others. The other one, and I was very fortunate to have an administrator. In fact, he was a hospital president who came in one day to our administrative team as a service line administrator and said, starting today, I want to spend one day a month, a complete day in your department. I said, what size scrubs do you wear? He said, a large. I got them for him. He spent an entire day with our staff. At the end of that day, I didn't have to talk about productivity. He's a really cool guy. I didn't have to tell him what a nebulizer was and a ventilated patient day was. He saw it. And the therapist showed him that when I do a breathing treatment, it takes about this long, about 15 minutes. When I do a blood gas or set a bi-level or do a ventilator discontinuance, he saw it. The conversation we had after that was really simple. He said, I get it. One doesn't equal one. A nebulizer doesn't equal a ventilated patient day. So I think if you understand your business practices, talk to other leaders because the answers might be right there. Make sure you engage your medical director. And quite honestly, I'm not being superficial about this. Ask your boss, can I get you some scrubs and show you the great work our therapists do and how they do it and how we add value. It's a walking, living, breathing RT performance dashboard.
I want to thank each of you for your time today. But before we end it, there's just one quick question that I'd like to ask each of you. So, and I'll get to that in just a moment. When we sell this product, when the AARC sells this product this year, we are going to have two versions. We're going to have a basic version and a premium version. So the basic version is going to be typically some of the things that you would have expected to see in previous iterations of the Uniform Reporting Manual. You're going to have the time standards and clinical activities. You can't have the guide. You can't have a staffing manual without that. We'll also be providing our purchasers with the methodology for how the guide was put together. You can't defend your position if you don't know how the data and the validated information was derived. We'll also include the value efficiency position statement and issue paper that Rick mentioned earlier. We will include case studies from other organizations and other experienced managers who have found a way to utilize time standards as their metric for measuring productivity and efficiency and how they've done that successfully. We'll provide some applications to integrate the time standards into your EMR and informatics. And then there'll also be a staffing tool and productivity workbook. So all of that in the basic version. But wait, there is more. In the premium version, you're going to get everything that you got out of the basic, but you'll also get an executive summary, a listing of all the CPT codes for each procedure that respiratory therapists most commonly perform, staffing plan templates, and any time that there is going to be an update to the staffing guide over the next 3 years, that will be provided complimentary for the purchasers of the premium version. But what I think is going to be the most value-added piece for the premium version is that the two of you are going to be doing a hosted webinar, kind of a how-to for that inexperienced respiratory therapist who's not sure what to make of the data, how to utilize the data, and how to communicate the value of their department to the C-suite. And I think that is going to add the most value to the premium version of everything, because not only are you going to, that will they have the tool, but now you guys are going to be personally taking them on a recorded journey on how to use the tool. And it'll be a very interactive and hands-on approach. So I'm going to end it with this question to each of you. You have less than 30 seconds to respond. What is the one piece or the one component of the new staffing guide that you think is going to be most beneficial to the RT manager? Gary, we'll start with you first.
You always limit us to one, Doug. So I can think of three. But if I had to pick one, I think the biggest barrier that managers are saying together today is, I get it, but how do I implement it? So how to implement it, particularly within your EMR, so that when you do a procedure, it captures the clinical documentation and the time standard. That is absolutely essential.
And Rick, I'll ask you the same question.
Boy, that is a tough one, because I think there's so much added value in the chapters we've included. But I think one of the things we didn't talk too much about that is going to be really neat, I would have paid just to get this piece, is the annotated bibliography. If you're looking for California Title 22, if you're looking for Medicare conditions of participation, if you're looking for articles that have been written on staffing from respiratory therapists to nursing, it is probably the most comprehensive body of literature that we've ever put together as a reference. And it's annotated so you can see the title, you can see what it's about. And if you think you might want to look at it, it's going to have a hyperlink that will take you to the current online open access version. And I think that's of tremendous value. I wish I would have had that 30 years ago.
So if data and information is king, this product is a no-brainer for everybody then. It literally, to some degree, almost spoon feeds the respiratory manager everything that they need to be successful in optimizing staffing, measuring efficiency and productivity of the staff, and communicating the value to the, not only the C-suite, but to the community at large as well.
Yeah. And Doug, I just add something quickly. And I was so glad that the AARC took this position because in prior URMs, you forked out your $125 or whatever, and you got the three-ring binder or the CD, and that was it. Occasionally, you'd see a lecture at Congress. But that there is a commitment for ongoing support for these programs that we'll be conducting to further educate and update the manual as well. So I think that the fact that it's rather than a one-time purchase, it's a journey, it's a living document, and that the AARC is supporting it to the extent they are is fantastic.
This is not just a two-man show. There were others that were involved in this. But you guys certainly played lead dog in this endeavor, and we certainly appreciate all that you've done to help advance the profession and made respiratory management or administration of departments much easier. Gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Doug.
Yep, thank you, Doug.
Thanks for listening to AARC Perspectives. Be sure to check out our show notes page for information about today's episode, as well as links to our other podcast episodes. Be sure to know when our next episode airs by subscribing to our podcast. Until next time, my friends, keep on supporting the respiratory therapy profession.